You're listening to episode 222 of Women Worldwide. Did you know that according to the American Psychiatric Association, that 40% of Americans are more anxious than they were at this point last year? But how do you break free from the bonds of anxiety? I've got a guest who's an anxiety expert, and she's going to share how. So stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thanks for tuning into the show. Whether you are listening to us on iTunes or now you're watching us on YouTube, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We really appreciate you being here. And our goal is always to bring the stories of amazing women and professionals who openly share the ups and downs of their careers and their lives. And they're always ready to share great advice with you because we are impacting lives one story at a time. So I want to dive into today's topic, which I'm not going to tell you what it is. Maybe you can guess, but it is talked about all of the time. It's all around us. It's affecting more people than you probably realize. And it's especially affecting younger generations, millennials, and Gen Z. Well, have you guessed it? It's anxiety. And who better to talk about anxiety than an anxiety expert? So joining me on the show is Stephanie D'Alfonso. Stephanie has spent 20 years researching holistic, natural, and scientifically proven methodologies on how to respond to anxiety and to cope and to build resilience. And she's also the author of this book right here, which I read and I highly recommend, Goodbye Anxiety, Hello Freedom. And I could go on and on about Stephanie and the techniques because I've spent some time with her. But I think it's better that you hear her story and she shares with you. Stephanie, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Deirdre. This is going to be an incredible conversation. I'm so looking forward to this.
Well, me too. So I didn't share a lot about you because I wanted you to tell everyone sort of when you started this process, your 20 years of why you actually began researching and trying to help others with anxiety.
It started out not trying to help others. It started out as I needed something for me. And it's actually been a little over 20 years now. It was as I was ending my first career, I was a celebrity radio DJ. And my last job was doing the morning show. And my kids were still little. My son was still in diapers. And, you know, to do the morning show, you get up in the middle of the night. And I developed insomnia, and it was debilitating. Anybody who is watching or listening that has ever experienced insomnia, like you say that word and you see it in their eyes because it's horrendous. So I did what most people do, and I went to the doctor, got a prescription.
All right.
And it worked for a short time, and then it stopped working. And so then it was, you know, it got even worse. What if I take the pill and it doesn't work? What if blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, the medication is just a Band-Aid. What is this thing called anxiety? And so this was in the mid-90s.
Right.
There was no Google. The internet was in its infancy. So I had to be old school doing the research, going to the library and checking out books and magazines and cassette tapes, if you remember that.
Yes, I do, actually. So, I remember 8-track cassette tapes.
Yes. So I was researching for my own sanity, right? And I didn't know that at the time, I honestly didn't know that I had struggled with anxiety my entire life. Like, it was just what I knew. I just knew that, you know, the what ifs and all of that, that was all I knew. And when the doctor said, well, anxiety and insomnia, like, go hand in hand, that was such a wake-up call for me. So I began researching to find ways that I could manage my emotions where, you know, most people feel like they cannot be in charge of their emotions. Like, most people are stuck in that survival mode, as I was. And you can master your emotions. You can control them. It's learning new healthy habits. So, you know, I began to find these ways to work for myself. And then we faced a life-threatening illness with my husband. Mm-hmm. And now I've given up my radio career. I have two small kids and the very real prospect that I'm going to be a widow. How am I going to support these, you know, myself and my kids?
It's scary. So
it was terrifying. And I went to coaching school and I learned hypnosis. And let me tell you, on the day I first learned hypnosis, it was like, okay, I know what I'm meant to do. And I went on to have a successful hypnosis practice for 10 years and found that so much of what people were coming to work on with me was rooted in anxiety.
Anxiety.
Yeah. It's so prevalent. Deirdre, I just saw this thing recently from Gallup polls. They did a study last year of 151,000 people across the world. And unfortunately, Americans are among the most stressed.
Oh my goodness. Well, that does not surprise me though. Right. I feel like there's just a cloud of stress over us.
So for Americans, again, I don't know how many Americans, but you know, that's a big sample of 151,000 people globally. So they asked people about their emotions from the day before. You know, how were you feeling the day before? Americans. 55% said they felt a lot of stress the day before. 45% said they worried a lot the day before. 22% said they felt a lot of anger. So,
did anybody say they were happy the day before?
somehow they didn't put that in the Gallup poll that I saw, but you know, I would hope so.
I know.
But so with these crisis levels, and those are, we're talking about adults, and then, you know, at some point I'm sure we'll start talking about the kids and teens and young adults because they're experiencing crisis levels as well.
And that's where it starts. That's why it's so important to recognize in your own child or in yourself what's going on.
Well, because as I said, you know, I went through my entire life not knowing that there was another way to live.
Right.
So as far as like a mother with a young child, I would really say put your oxygen mask on first, then help your kid, because anxious parents have anxious kids.
So Stephanie, is there something, so you saw the insomnia. That's what clearly, you know, the light bulb clicked on when there was a tie-in between the insomnia and the anxiety. A parent today, or even anybody listening out there with loved ones and friends around them, what are some of the other signs that you can pick up on to know that someone is especially stressed or experiencing anxiety?
Well, simple things like, is there a higher tendency towards anger, right? Is controlling. Like, I didn't understand. I had during my, you know, my awakening, I had an immaculate house because it was the one thing I felt like I could control. Mm-hmm. And when you have anxiety, you just feel like you have no control over anything. So you're then trying to control everything. And of course, it's all an illusion anyway. So you want to be looking for the subtle signs. It could be the tendency toward anger. It could be the other extreme where they are, you know, listless and sleeping a lot more or withdrawing. A lot of times people withdraw. You know, I call it the turtle syndrome because we just kind of pull back into our shells, avoiding people. You know, something simple like somebody avoiding going to the self-checkout so they don't have to deal with the cashier.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're subtle ways. So it's not like, okay, you know, you're having a panic attack. That's pretty apparent that
sure.
You need to take a look at things. But when you are starting to see different behaviors in a loved one or a friend or a coworker, again, you don't go and go right into their face and say, hey, I think you've got a serious problem with anxiety, get a grip. You know, you want to be compassionate and, you know, hey, how are you doing?
Oh, that's great. Just that how are you question might open up to some conversation for somebody to be able to say, oh, I am, I'm feeling more stressed out, or this is what's going on. I think these conversations have to start. I really want to talk about your book because I read it and there were so many different techniques in the book. So I'm hoping that maybe you'll share some of those techniques, the common ones, the less common ones.
Well, I have 35 techniques in the book, and I don't know if you noticed, Deirdre, that they're in alphabetical order, and they're in alphabetical order for a reason, because you see how thin the book is?
Yeah, I love it. It's like a quick read, but powerful.
Intentional, because simple shifts are what create lasting change. If I wrote a 400-page book and said, hey, read this to help with your anxiety, it's going to cause anxiety.
Right? That is going to cause anxiety, yes.
So there are 35 different techniques because one size does not fit all. And I want you to just read the first two short chapters, which, give a good setup to, my philosophy, and then just peruse through the table of contents and find crossing the midline. What's that? Simple tennis ball. Back and forth. Back and forth. Well, you probably don't have a tennis ball. Do you have a water bottle? Back and forth. Or just use your hands and go crossing the midline. Right? Keep doing that, Deirdre, and I'll explain why that works. And you'll notice the calm feeling coming over you.
Yeah.
It's because we're crossing the midline of the body, activating and balancing both sides of the brain.
It's great.
Right.
And you can just be sitting anywhere and do that.
Right.
And so, it's not like you have to go and meditate, get a quiet room and turn everything off. That is just such a simple technique that you showed us.
Right. And so this is something you can weave into. And this is where you have to begin healthy new habits. Anytime that you want to learn something new, learn a new sport, learn a new musical instrument, you practice and practice and practice. So it's not, do this one time and then you're never going to feel stressed or anxious again. You have to continuously be emptying the stress bucket every single day with these simple techniques. And when I say, you can do this and in under 30 seconds, you can feel calmer. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
Exactly.
Or,
I know.
No, I'm not bored and I'm not trying to be rude. It's one of the techniques is to yawn.
Now, it works. It does work because of that one big nerve.
Yep, the vagus nerve.
It's That's
the largest nerve in the body. It goes from the brain down into your abdomen and encircles all of your internal organs. That, in turn, stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, or rest and digest. And so, even if you're in, in a stressful work environment, nobody's going to say, what are you doing? Right? She didn't get much sleep last night. Right?
You're helping yourself.
So, we have a tendency to want to overcomplicate things. Like, I have to meditate 20 minutes in the morning and meditate 20 minutes at night to be successful at this. You don't.
No. I mean, you could. It does. It helps. But there's so many things. No excuses. These are all things that you can do easily.
Right. And the excuses, it's because we think that, it has to be this big thing. Or I can't change. Well, I'm here to tell you, you can change, and it's easy. It's easier than you think.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, you set it up in the book. It's not to react to anxiety. It's to respond, and that you can take action.
And that's where this, this famous quote from Viktor Frankl about between stimulus and response, there's a space. And it really is just a small little space. But in that space is our power to choose our response. And then in our response lies our growth and our freedom. And that's why my book is Goodbye Anxiety, Hello Freedom. The freedom of responding, not reacting.
Yeah, and freedom is feels so much better. There are some other techniques too that are just simple, like smiling.
Right? And I know you've been playing with that, and it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So smiling. It makes a difference for ourselves, because even if we are having one of those dark, dreary days and we smile, it's that fake it till you make it. You know, your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between real and imagined. If I can do a quick little thing with you, Deirdre, to really bring this home. I can't imagine somebody would be watching this and driving. Maybe somebody's driving while they're listening to this. If you're driving, don't do this with us. But if you're not, go ahead and close your eyes if you would. And simply imagine that you and I are in the same room, and I bring out a cutting board and a lemon, although it's not just any old lemon, it's a Costco lemon, so it's like the size of a grapefruit, and a knife. And imagine that yellow lemon, the color, the dimply skin, the little pointy ends of it. And imagine that I start rolling it around on the cutting board, and it starts begin to release the scent. You can maybe imagine a little scent of that lemony goodness. And then imagine that I take a very sharp knife and I slice it right in half. And now it's also spraying some of the juice. And maybe you can imagine feeling some of that juice on your skin. And you can smell it even more now. And now imagine that you reach out and you pick up one of those halves. You bring it up under your nose and smell it. And then imagine you take a big, juicy bite. What happened? Open your eyes.
Well, actually, my mouth was watering at one point when you were talking about it, but then it was like,
Right. And so we're not even in the same room. There's no lemon.
No.
No knife. And yet.
But sensory perception, like it was happening. It felt like it was real.
Because the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between real and imagined. So when I say just smile, even if, you know, fake it till you make it, your subconscious mind doesn't recognize I'm grumpy. It's like, oh, I'm happy. Okay.
So is that why I think there's one about gratitude?
Oh my gosh. Gratitude. And isn't it interesting that before we started recording, I told you, I was like, oh, let me check in, see what oil, because I'm so into essential oils. What oil is best going to support this conversation? And we got patchouli, which is the oil of gratitude.
Gratitude.
Right? So gratitude.
There are no coincidences.
No. So gratitude is so powerful because I really believe in before your feet hit the floor in the morning, like when you first wake up, express three things that you're grateful for. Because first of all, that's setting the whole tone for the rest of the day, right? Sean Acor, I love him. He is a happiness researcher and he talks so much about gratitude. And I think it was from him that I heard this, that Wellbutrin, the prescription medication, produces dopamine in your brain. And then Prozac produces serotonin. Gratitude produces both.
Oh.
Like, isn't that...
You don't have to take drugs.
Well, you know, I like...
Amazing.
I like to take the natural route. I mean...
Absolutely.
That's really incredible to think about, that we can intentionally manufacture these hormones that are going to help us to feel happier. Like, we can choose that.
We can choose it. We can create it for ourselves. Oh, there's so much that you can do. I'm remembering something in the book about, I think it's affirmations. And I think why they don't work.
Right. And I think I think it says affirmations don't work.
I remember correctly.
Because first of all, it really gets your attention because, you know, aside from Louise Hay, who was, you know, very, like, I adore this woman. She, you know, I really adore her and what she's done for the self-help movement in this world. And yet, aside from her, I really have never met anybody who has said, wow, affirmations changed my life. Because what happens is I'm very into the conscious subconscious mind, right? So if you imagine our mind as an iceberg, mm-hmm. What you see above the waterline is only 10%. 90% of that iceberg is below the surface. That represents our mind. Conscious mind is about 10%. So 90% of our powerful mind is the unconscious or subconscious mind. So when we, see what affirmation you can come up with. What would be an affirmation that comes to mind?
Oh, maybe like a health affirmation or something like that.
Okay. So a health, did you say health?
Yeah, health.
Okay. So if you are in ill health, mm-hmm. and you just say over and over again, I am healthy and strong. I am healthy and well. I am healthy and well. Everything in you is going, no, I'm not. I'm sick. I have blah, blah, blah. Right? So I came across this book by Noah St. John called Affirmations. And ding, 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 it makes so much sense. So instead of saying, I am healthy and well when you're not, right? Because everything was going to be pushing up against that. Instead, you turn it into a question. Why am I able to be healthy and well?
And well, that's interesting.
It's setting your mind out like a Google search. You know, I love Google because I love doing research. And, you know, I put in a question and in, you know, a little nanosecond, I get, you know, hundreds of thousands of results. So when we program our brain, why am I healthy and well? You start looking for ways you can be healthier and have more well-being, right? So if, oh, why am I able to be healthier and have better well-being? Oh, maybe it's because I can start eating healthier. Maybe I start walking up the stairs in my office instead of taking the elevator. You start seeing possibilities that
an action that you can take.
Correct. And right. and possibilities. Like that's right. one of the things I'm so, you know, into is helping people to see possibilities, right?
Is that the just imagine? Or is that a little different?
It's different because possibilities are, you know, we see, again, most people don't believe they can control their emotions, right?
Right.
Okay, this is my lot in life and this is how I am and I can't change. Well, let me show you a possibility of how you can. Oh, let's do this and see how you feel. Oh, can you stop for just a moment, look in my eyes, and as you breathe in, think, I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out. I'm breathing in. I'm breathing out. And then somebody can go, oh, that felt pretty good.
Yeah, that does feel pretty good. Yeah. So I've been doing that.
So maybe I can change. That's opening up to possibilities.
So many possibilities. You know, this is a fascinating discussion. I'm gonna ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're gonna shift our focus, Stephanie, to the sponsor of today's show, which is Routledge Publishing. And Routledge is one of the largest academic publishers of books and journals in the world. And they also happen to be my publisher.
Yay.
This book right here, Answers for Modern Communicators, A Guide to Effective Business Communication. And Stephanie, my book is a Q&A book, so I've answered over 150 questions. And I just thought it would be fun if I gave you a question to answer from the book, okay? So let's get your question. All right, so sometimes rejection, of course, causes stress or anxiety. So your question is, how do you handle rejection?
Ooh, great question.
Thank you.
Because rejection, you know, that's like, that really feels awful, right?
It does. Yes.
If 100 people say something about us and 99 say these wonderful glowing things and one person rejects us or cuts us down, which one do we focus on? We don't focus on the 99. We focus on the one who rejected us. And so what we focus on becomes our reality, right? Mm-hmm. So as hard as it is for rejection, the best way to handle it is to, and it's not going to come easy if you don't already do this, but to shift your focus. And it's, I'm not saying let's go from one extreme to the other where, you know, somebody had this horrible, horrible thing to say about you, rejecting you, to, oh, now let's just look at these 99 people who had nice things to say, because that's too big a leap. Remember, Simple shifts are what create lasting change. So to make that simple shift away from, ooh, that was really awful, and then what's our tendency? We go back and we go over it again and again and again. So the first simple shift for that would be to, okay, let me back up from that and just breathe. Because when we breathe, we come into the present moment. And that rejection didn't happen in this present moment. It happened over there or behind, right? So again, it's those simple shifts. Then you can eventually get to the point where, oh, ow, boy, that really hurt. Let me go take a look at all these 99 people who said, I'm really wonderful.
It's easier to get there.
Yeah. But again, if I said, okay, to deal with rejection, just go look at the 99. It's not realistic. It's not achievable. But, oh, or again, it ties in with the possibility of being able to do that. Well, how do you do that? You do that with baby steps.
Right. It seems like, staying on the rejection topic, when something like that happens and you mentioned it goes over and over in our minds, it's almost like you have to break that thought pattern, do something different. If you think differently, it'll cause you to act differently, which will cause that little shift that gets you to somewhere else. Otherwise, you just keep in that same pattern, which is really unhealthy and is harmful to yourself. So yeah. I think that's what you were saying.
To keep, heeping yourself with rejection over and over and over again, who would want that? But if you think about that, these habitual patterns, this is what we need to break, is these habitual patterns. And it takes a little effort, right? It's not hard. I will tell you, it is not hard. But if you think about it, if your car is stuck in the mud or in snow and your tires are just all you need is that little bit of traction and then you're out of the
ditch. You're out.
Right?
Right.
When we are continuously going over and over and over the rejection, whether it's a rejection in business, a rejection in a relationship, a friendship, you know, whatever. If we just start making the effort to, in that space, like I mentioned that Viktor Frankl quote before, in that space, you get that split nanosecond to say, I want to choose something different. Because we've all heard that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over.
Over and over again.
Right? Exactly. Expecting a different result. So for the rejection piece, and that's, you know, that's a really big issue because it's so personal, right? Like maybe they're rejecting just an idea that you floated, but it feels like it's this personal attack, right? But so if you just start to choose, I'm going to recognize that's my old pattern and I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to shut the computer off so I'm not looking at that. And I'm just going to breathe into the moment. And that's enough to start that simple shift.
That's great. Thank you for that, answering that question. And thank you to Rutledge for being our sponsor today. All right. Well, I want to dive back into the techniques because there's another one that I wanted to bring up. Why does strike a pose help so much? I can't figure it out, but it feels good.
Okay. You've tried it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So Amy Cuddy has one of the most watched TED Talks ever, and it's on this strike a pose. And there's been some discord about that since then, but my experience is what she talks about in this TED talk. And she did tests, saliva tests. And so she would have people come in and for only 2 minutes, they would stand in a power pose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Superman, Superwoman, victory. Think about even blind runners in marathons, blind runners who have never seen someone cross the finish line doing this, they do it anyway.
They do it anyway.
Wow. Right? So what happens when we feel, when we stand here feeling victorious and powerful? Literally after 2 minutes, they check the saliva again and there's higher testosterone, lower cortisol levels.
Ooh.
Conversely, they'd have people in low power poses. hunched over. Or how many people do we see these days on their devices?
Oh, right.
Right? Yeah. Before a job interview. Mm-hmm. After 2 minutes, they check the saliva, higher cortisol, lower testosterone.
That's interesting.
It's incredible.
Scientific. So again,
there's been some discord, saying that it was faulty research or whatever. But my experience, my personal experience, and that with clients is it works. You know, I will tell somebody, I don't tell people, I invite people. Okay, I extend the invitation that before your job interview, go in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And stand there victoriously. And without a doubt, they all come back and say, oh my gosh, that helped so much. I went in feeling so confident.
That's great. Do you know sometimes, and this is before we met, before I read the book, before I would go on stage, I would raise my arms up and just do this and say, I've got this.
Because you knew it felt good.
It felt good, yeah.
It humped you up. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, the discord about, you know, whether her research was faulty or not, it works.
It definitely works. So what about generations? I'm Gen Z, right? And I mentioned before, and we're seeing it. We're seeing it with stats about depression and anxiety. They're kind of rising.
We are experiencing
crisis levels. We are definitely experiencing. Exactly.
Yes.
So kids, why?
Young adults. We're living in a very, very different world than when you and I grew up. Very different world. And I see a lot of it has to do with technology. And I feel like the grandma in the room, but my daughter just turned 30. And 26 years ago, when she was 4 years old, the neighbor boy down the street, 6-year-old neighbor boy, got one of the first handheld video games. And he's off in the corner by himself playing with his game, while all the other kids were over here interacting and playing with each other. And we see kids today with less interpersonal skills, they're communicating less. Oh my gosh, talk on a telephone? No.
Right. I mean, you could be within your own home. And I remember when our kids were younger, they would be texting us. And we're like, wait, you could walk, you know, come upstairs and talk to me.
Yeah, no. So, I went to a really fabulous conference called Mindfulness in America in New York City, and Tony Fadell was one of the people there. Now, Mindfulness in America, they bring together thought leaders from the mindfulness movement and the tech movement. So Tony Fadell was there.
Interesting.
Tony Fadell invented the iPod, and he was involved in the first three generations of the iPhone. And he talked about how I think a lot of people are starting to understand that these devices are addictive, but he talked about how they're intentionally addictive. All the notifications that, you know, we get for the, you know, for this notification, that notification, they're giving you a dopamine hit.
And so FOMO is really because you're getting a dopamine hit?
Yes, because when you get a dopamine hit, you want more dopamine hits.
Right.
And so Tony Fadell, like, he said, I wonder if my grandkids are going to be the one to say, my grandfather ruined society.
Oh.
He's talking about these notifications. And I'm in this big theater in New York City, and I'm thinking, I have a very different relationship with my phone than everybody else in this theater.
Right.
I don't have any notifications on my phone. It makes one sound, and it's a Zen bell chime if somebody's actually calling to talk to me on the phone.
All right, I'll be transparent here. I do get some notifications, but I've turned a lot off.
Okay, that's great.
I definitely do. And my phone does not stay by the bedside anymore. The way across the room.
Ariana Huffington
turned off.
Very, very clear about that.
That helps.
The other thing I wanted to say about the technology that really is what I think gets a lot of people to go, whoa, is that swipe down motion.
Yeah.
Mimics the one I did at slot machine.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
And, you know, I share that with people because, you know, when I heard that, I was like, head snap. And when I share that with people now, like you, just like, head snap.
Yep.
right? So I'm not saying turn off all your notifications. I tried that with a client once. I said, okay, I'd like to extend an invitation to you that for the next week, you turn off all the notifications, except for if somebody's going to call me. I can't do that. I said, okay, how about 3 days? Do you think we could go for 3 days? Well, I can try for 3 days if I can leave the texts on. And I'll turn the phone off. But, you know, if somebody wants to get in touch with me, they've got to be able to get in touch with me. And she couldn't make the 3 days. So I'm not saying totally disconnect from your devices, totally right. disconnect from your notifications. But can you, like, could you try it for an hour? Can you, like you've already done, can you cut some of them down?
Yeah.
So again, not these like go from black to white, but some shade in between.
That's right. We need more of the gray. So everybody's different. I mean, is that what you do with your clients? You sort of assess where they are in their stress or anxiety level and then make recommendations that would help them?
Yeah, because again, one size doesn't fit all. I am like so steadfast about that because, you know, I had a successful hypnosis practice for 10 years and many hypnotists, most people don't know this, but the majority of hypnotists, as I was trained, was told that the majority of hypnotists are reading the same script for every client. Every stop smoking client, they will read the same script. Well, I was a smoker. I horrified to admit that I was a smoker for many years. My smoking experience was completely different than, the guy, the male CEO, So, it has to be that individualized approach. So whatever somebody's coming to work with me on, it's okay, let's see where you are. And then let's see how we can get you where you want to go. Again, right. It's not going, okay, go from here to here because it's not sustainable. But when we start making those simple shifts, this is why I keep coming back to simple shifts are what create lasting change because they become the new healthy habits.
Absolutely. So for yourself through this long journey and what you mentioned about, even the insomnia part or whatever was going on, today, do you have certain techniques, if you don't mind sharing, that you love to use? Like, right away, oh, I better start Just Imagine, or maybe I'm going to strike a pose. What in your book?
So again, I start with gratitude. I always start the day with gratitude. And that's not to say that I wake up and I'm, it's not, I'm so grateful I won the lottery. There are many, there are mornings when you wake up and it's like, gosh, are you kidding me? Okay, I'm really grateful that I'm in my warm, cozy bed. I'm really grateful I remembered to brush my teeth last night. It doesn't have to be something huge. And I kind of disagree with, again, Sean Acor, the happiness researcher. He says you need to keep coming up with different things to be grateful for.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'm repeating the same things and I'm still feeling really good and grateful about that. He does say that you can take it a step farther and go into why you're grateful for whatever it is. But so I always start my day with gratitude. I am a devout yogi. One of the many hats I wear is as a certified yoga teacher. And so my yoga practice is a daily part of my practice. That doesn't mean I get to the yoga studio every single day. For anybody who's listening or watching that thinks, oh, I can't do yoga, play with me just for a moment. And if you would, just close your eyes or bring them to a soft gaze and let your awareness be on your breath. Just noticing the inhale through the nose, the exhale through the nose, that inhale is probably cooler than the exhale is. And then you can open your eyes and guess what? Just practiced yoga. Yoga is not, just a physical asana practice. There's eight limbs to yoga. And with your breath, I have so many breath techniques in the book because your breath is always with you. You don't need any special equipment. You don't need to, go anywhere. You can simply come to your breath and come into the present moment. And so I'm constantly doing that. It doesn't mean that my mind doesn't wander. It's another thing that it's a lot of misconception about is meditation that, I have to empty my mind. Well, tell me to empty my mind and I'm going to have 1,000 thoughts come rushing in, right? So it's not about empty your mind. It's noticing, oh, if the thoughts come in, notice them, let them go, bring your awareness back to your breath.
What is it about the different nostrils, breathe in, breathe out?
Okay, that's pranayama, and it's similar to the crossing the midline, because again, when we're crossing left and right sides of the brain, we're balancing it.
Balancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get to the middle, right? Yes. Black or white, just get to the gray, get in the middle.
Right.
Centered.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So learning, how do you, as an expert, how do you stay up on your game?
I am an insatiable researcher and learner. I honestly believe that until I take my last breath, I have more to learn. And I think that's true for all of us. You know, whether you're into, you know, actively seeking to learn more or not, I think there's, you know, the more that I learn, the more I learn there is to learn. And so I'm constantly, you know, reading articles. That's why, you know, the Gallup one that just came out, I'm constantly looking for new information. First of all, I love being able to point to, okay, here's Gallup saying this. The Adverse Childhood Experiences study, which I talk about in the book.
Yes.
Real quick, that was just mind-blowing. And this research was done back in the 1990s, and it's only really come to the forefront in the past several years. And it was done by the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente. So, like, I can point to this, and it's like, I'm not just making stuff up where, you know, a lot of times people were like, oh, she's just making it up. It's like, no.
No, it's there.
Here's hardcore research. They asked 17,000 adults, so a very good size study, 10 questions about their childhood. Did this happen before the age of 18? It was talking about emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, addiction in the home, losing a parent to divorce, incarceration, death. And they found that the higher you score on this, like, I'm an overachiever. I scored pretty high on this thing. And this is not a quiz you want to score high.
No.
The higher you score on this, the more likely it is that you will experience physical and emotional dis-ease as adults. Obesity, diabetes, depression, suicide, addiction, on and on and on. Direct correlation. So again, I didn't have a lot of research to, you know, to point to for many, many years. And so I talk about the Adverse Childhood Experiences study in my book. 3 days before my book published, Oprah was on 60 Minutes talking about adverse childhood experiences.
Wow, the timing. Wow. Yeah,
because it's again, this was done back in the 90s.
Maybe you need to talk to Oprah about this.
Well, I would love to.
Oprah, I hope you're listening.
I'm sure she's listening. But so anybody who's listening and or watching and thinking, you know, what are adverse childhood experiences, you can simply Google ACES, Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. The one from NPR is usually the one that comes up first in the Google ranks. Go through the 10 questions.
Take the test.
And if you score 4 or more, please get help. Obviously, yes. I would love you to contact me and I could help you through that. But if not me, find a trusted referral, because there are a lot of people who are very good at what they do, and there are a lot of people who are out there saying they're very good at what they do and they're not. So, you know, when you're dealing with adverse childhood experiences, when you're dealing with childhood trauma, I want to be, you know, I want to be like a mother and be protective and just say, you know, make sure if you're going to get help, you get help from someone you know, like, and trust.
Right. So this is not something, if you do score really high, it's not that you can, I mean, I hope everybody gets your book, but it's beyond the book.
Like, oh,
it's really, yes, you really need to seek help.
So it's, for me, there's really two pieces to it. If you just have a little bit of anxiety, if you don't have childhood trauma, although I read, you know, 1 in 7 of us have experienced at least one of these childhood traumas. So, you know, for somebody who can just learn some of the techniques and they can function pretty well, you know, great, the book's enough. If you have, especially if you have childhood trauma, you need to do the healing work. And that's really the work that I do, is the healing work. It's not just, it's not about, you know, talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, right? It's about really getting to that core and that healing work. And many times we don't even know about it, right? Many times our conscious mind protects us, and we have an experience as a child that we don't remember, that we don't know about. And so, you know, it's not like I say, okay, well, let's go back to when you were 6 years old and the dog came, the neighborhood dog came running after you. You know, it doesn't work that
way. It's not that way.
But I have a really wonderful intuitive ability to be able to safely, with the client, have their higher mind guide us to where we need to go. And oftentimes the client has no idea where we're going, and that's okay.
Right.
Because we get the conscious mind out of the way.
Fascinating. Well, I want to ask you two more questions.
Okay.
One is to sort of give that, I can't believe we're up to the advice part. So just wrapping up, what would you tell listeners out there, professionals, about kind of coping with their anxieties, some steps they can take? What do you want to share with them?
Okay. First of all, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude about this, but I'm not into coping with anxiety or managing it. It's truly getting on the other side of it, because it's
overcoming.
It's possible. So I would extend an invitation to anybody who's listening or watching to, for the next 7 days, pick a couple of the techniques, either the ones that we talked about on the show today, or you can get 5 of the techniques free. We'll put that link in later. 5 of the techniques from my book for free. And just pick a couple of them and commit to the next 7 days, really practicing them, weaving them in and out of every single day. Ding, 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 take it up a notch. Have an accountability buddy. Have somebody watch or listen to this with you, and team up to be accountable to each other, because studies have shown, you know, we achieve much more when we have that accountability factor in mind. So 7 days, like, we can do almost anything for 7 days, right?
And then absolutely,
7 days, check in and notice. If you're doing the work, you will feel more calm and more balanced. It's that simple.
That's awesome. Great advice. And last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your book, download the 5 techniques?
Okay, thanks. StephanieDelfonso.com. Hopefully that'll be typed out in the show notes, because heck knows how to spell that, right? I'm all over social media. And for the techniques, go to the number 5. easywaystocalmanxiety.com, and hopefully that'll be in the show notes too. And
absolutely,
if you want to buy my book, it's available on Amazon, and for every copy that I sell, I donate a copy to a school or organization that will teach some of the skills to kids, teens, and young adults, because that's how I can add light to this crisis.
That's fantastic. Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your techniques, all of your insights, advice. Really, I mean, you've helped me. I'm thinking you're helping listeners out there too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. We appreciate all the ways that you're sharing the stories of our amazing guests like Stephanie, who come on Women Worldwide. You're amplifying, sharing is caring. We love that. We love your feedback too. So if you will, rate us on iTunes, give us a shout out on Twitter, Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to YouTube as well. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.